That's hockey, baby!
The Rivalry Rally Special is commercial-free and presented by the Village of Bedford Park and Chicago's own Nuveen on 720 WGN.
Village, Happy New Year! Are you a St. Louis Blues fan? Make some noise! Are you a Chicago Blackhawks fan? Make some noise. We welcome you to the KMOX WGN Rivalry Rally presented by Bud Light. We're going to have some excitement going on stage here, so let's get right after it. First up, please welcome Judd Surratt. He's in his ninth season as the radio studio host on the Blackhawks radio home, WGN Radio AM 720. Surratt and broadcast partners John Weideman and Troy Murray were named Best Radio Play-by-Play in the Chicago market at the 2015 Illinois Broadcasters Association Silver Dome Awards. Please welcome Judd Surratt. Come on, give him some love, WGN fans. Next up, welcome KMOX Sports Director and co-host of Total Information AM, Tom Ackerman. Tom has been a staple in St. Louis sports since he hosted his first sports open line in October of 1998. Tom was born and raised in St. Louis and always dreamt about working alongside the legends of KMOX sports. His dream came true when he started his career at KMOX, learning from one of the greatest, Jack Buck. Welcome, Tom. And now on to some hockey faces. He played for the Chicago Blackhawks from 1969 to 1984. He was a six-time NHL All-Star Game goalie and part of the 1969 Stanley Cup champion team. His number 35 was retired on November 20th, 1988, and has been named as an ambassador to the Blackhawks organization. Please welcome Tony Esposito. Look at that ring. Show us that ring, Tony. Holy cow. You remember this St. Louis Blue wearing number 55 and playing on the team between 2007 and 2011. He grew up playing hockey with the St. Louis Sting and was recently inducted into the St. Louis Amateur Hockey Hall of Fame. Please welcome a Eureka High School alum and St. Louis's very own Cam Jansen. I'm very excited to introduce one of the most dynamic players in the National Hockey League in the 1960s. 10-time first-team All-Star left wing, Stanley Cup champion in 1961, 12th leading goal scorer in NHL history, inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame in 1983, played with the Chicago Blackhawks from 57 to 72, and nicknamed the Golden Jet for his quick moves and solid shooting ability on the ice and his colorful personality off the ice. Please welcome Bobby Ho! All right, Bobby, this is a live microphone I'm giving you here, so be careful. No cussing yet. And finally, a St. Louis Blues player. He scored 50 goals in 49 games, was the 90-91 season league's most valuable player, was named a first-team All-Star on three occasions, and played in eight NHL All-Star games, was a member of the 1996 World Cup of Hockey Championship team, and a two-time Olympian, and inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2009. And honor he shares with his father, as they were the first father-son pair of players in the Hall of Fame and were also the only father-son combo in NHL history to each score 1,000 points. Help me welcome number 16, Brett Hull. All right, I'm going to turn the stage over to Tom and Judd to take this rivalry rally. Here we go.
Am I okay, Tony?
Ladies and gentlemen, let's hear it once again for our legends of hockey in the rivalry rally. We welcome our friends into Chicago. Are we welcoming the Blackhawks into Chicago? Are we good with that, Blues fans?
No.
No.
We're good. Just one or two.
An incredible.
My dad and Tony can come. And that's
absolutely.
It.
They're welcome.
The rest of you, you better be Blues fans or we're not happy.
Hey, Brett. Brett, what a weekend this has been already. Incredible day yesterday.
Incredible. To walk out in Busch Stadium with the iconic venue that it is, to be a part of the rivalry with the Chicago Blackhawks, the great history and the great history of the St. Louis Blues from the Solomons right on to Mr. Stillman now, it's a wonderful thing, and it was a wonderful time that we had. The weather couldn't have been better. Could you imagine?
Oh, yeah.
The real players should have got that weather. We shouldn't have gotten that weather.
Well, it was absolutely perfect. And Judd, what a sight it was to see both teams out there.
It was amazing. Tony, you had a chance to go behind the bench for the alumni game. What was the setting like? What was the experience like?
It was great, except we lost. It was lots of fun. It's great being with all the guys that finally get together for one sort of last hurrah. And it was great to see all those Hall of Famers on the ice. It just was a fun experience for everybody. And it was more like an alumni reunion, you know. They played hard, but they didn't want to hurt anybody. And it was just wonderful.
You know, Tony, don't you think that was, it's almost sad that there was another game in Toronto, and we couldn't have Savvy. You know, we couldn't have Cujo or Brendan Shanahan, Chelly playing for Chicago. It just kind of took away a little bit from it, but it was still a wonderful event.
It was wonderful. I mean, they wanted a game in Toronto, as you know, and there's a lot of money involved with these games, so it was spread out. That was okay.
Cam, what was it like for you as someone who grew up in St. Louis to see these greats of the game participating?
Yeah, well, growing up here in Eureka, just watching these guys go out there was unbelievable. We actually went to the locker room, and Holly's there next to Gretz, Adam Oates, Pierre Turgeon, all these guys that I watched growing up, watching my family growing up. They're all in this cool locker room. All these, all their kids are in there. I mean, it was the coolest thing. And then walking out there was actually pretty nerve-wracking, to be honest. Every 10 feet, there was like a bump. You know what I'm talking about, right? Every 10 feet, there's a bump
you
in the thing.
You were nervous when you were running us over.
Exactly. Well, we play against each other in the alumni skates every morning, every three times a week. We all skate together leading up to this thing. So we've had our we're actually I've set him up for a couple goals, to be honest with you. But it was nerve-wracking walking all the way out there. There's bumps every 2 feet, and I was afraid I was going to wipe out in front of 50,000 people. That would have been pretty damn embarrassing. But just watching these guys was awesome, and seeing Wayne Gretzky and Holly sitting next to each other in the locker room, unbelievable stuff.
Bobby, when the Blues came in the late 60s and the team is celebrating its 50th anniversary, what was the rivalry first like when the Blues and the Blackhawks met?
Well, we knew that... when Scotty Bowman took over, we all knew that he had a good team, because Scotty would wait around until the final say was done, and then he'd choose where he wanted to coach. And he had a lot of players playing for the St. Louis Blues that he had in Montreal. There were a lot of elder statesmen that he had on the team, both on offense and defense. And we knew we were always in for a game every time that we played in the old Checker Dome at the St. Louis Arena. And even more than that, coming to St. Louis, being so close to Chicago, there was that rivalry. And also, I was telling Brett on the way over, he was pointing out some landmarks, and he said, and there was the old Checker Dome, and he said the old St. Louis Arena, and I said, you mean the Checker Dome? Yeah. And he said, Musial and Biggie's was just down that street. And we always, I don't know whether Tony, you were there in time to eat, have dinner at Musial and Biggie's.
Tony was in bed because he knew you weren't going to back check.
Tony used to say, oh, Stan and Bobby, it's so nice to see you. He says, I haven't seen you guys since warm up. But just coming there to have dinner at Musial and Biggie's was a wonderful time for us during that those late 60s and early 70s.
Folks, those are some great old buildings, weren't they? Chicago Stadium and the St. Louis Arena. Absolutely yes. Loved it. And Brett, what about for you playing in those buildings?
I'm going to tell you this. When I was a young boy, Billy Ray was kind of a mean old codger that coached the Blackhawks, right, Tony? And he'd never let the kids come around the room. So we would walk around the bottom of Chicago Stadium, and I would stand and watch the visiting teams. How many stairs?
22.
22 stairs up from the dressing room to the ice. And as a kid, I'd watch, and I was infatuated with the Rangers and the Bruins as they'd walk up. And then I'd walk back around, and I'd go up with Mr. Robinson and sit in his chair behind the net. And then to finally make the NHL and to play in Chicago Stadium and walk up those stairs and look up and know the great things that my dad and Tony had done in that stadium was incredible. But knowing I wanted to...
Not so fast, Kowalski.
But you talk to the Blackhawks and they will say St. Louis Arena, the Checker Dome, whatever you want to call it, was one of the craziest places on earth. And we will go the other way and go Chicago Stadium. Adam Oates and I, we skated up there, we walked up the stairs, and you know, you don't really pay attention to much while you're just kind of coming up. And all of a sudden we're starting lineup and we stand on the blue line and we look under the organ. Who's the old anthem singer? Mesmer.
Wayne Mesmer, but...
Unbelievable anthem. And we look up, and there's a Hull & Oates doll hanging by a noose. And we're like, we look at each other and go, we're in for a long night.
Al Malgard was the organ player, and he could make that big old organ talk.
That's the greatest organ in... Tony, don't you think? Greatest organ in the history of the world.
Well, it was sort of like the Phantom of the Opera kind of organ. But it was a lot of fun, and it's a pleasure to be here with you guys. I really, really enjoyed myself.
Tony, what was it like back in those days having Brett running around as a kid?
He's a goalie.
He was unbelievable. He was a terror. I can remember one time Bobby came at the house, and Brett was a little kid. And my son and Brett were playing, and Bobby and I were having a cold beer. And then all of a sudden, we started smelling. So the kids, first of all, my son, he filled his pants, and then Brett filled his pants. So we got two kids loaded and stinky. So I called all my neighbors that I used to have connections with. Six neighbors, nobody was home. So we can't change the diapers. So we put them in the crib. And we were looking in to see if they're okay, and they were screaming like they were in jail, you know. So we opened the bedroom window to help for it to stink. Then when the women came home, the wives came home, they weren't happy with Bobby and I.
Brett, have you heard this story before?
Well, no, the one I heard was when Phil came over for dinner, and my dad was cooking a leg of lamb, and all of a sudden they smelt smoke from behind the couch, and I was behind the couch smoking a cigar. I don't remember it, but he swears it's true.
Brett, what about Tony Esposito over here?
My favorite goalie of all time. My favorite of all time. If Bobby Hull wasn't my dad, I would be in the Hall of Fame as a goalie because I would have been Tony Esposito.
When he was playing out on the road, street hockey, and it wasn't because he wanted to be a goaltender. It was if he was a goaltender, he didn't have to run up and back. That's why he wanted to be a goaltender.
Tony Esposito is the greatest goalie I've ever seen in my whole life. I love him.
Hey.
Best.
And Brett Hull is the greatest goal scorer in the history of the game.
Cam, when it came to the rivalry as a kid who was from here, what was it like? You started your career with the Devils, but then you come to the St. Louis Blues. What was your introduction to this rivalry?
Oh, my God. Well, the introduction to this rivalry was when I was a kid. Watching him with my dad would always take me to every single game at the old arena, and you see all the birds flying around in the ceiling. You see Holly's mullet flying around, and you'd see the passion with the fans, how passionate they were in this rivalry. And then growing up and playing AAA hockey and wearing that blue note, and my dad would look at me and be like, hey, what number are you going to pick playing for the amateur Blues? I go, of course, 16. Everybody's gonna be looking for 16. All eyes are going to be on you one way or the other. So my dad would make me wear 16, and we'd go up these tournaments. And then finally, I got to get traded in my hometown and get the experience, my family and friends coming to watch in these games, and gosh, trying to fight Ben Eager every single game. These Blackhawks games would be so packed, and then we'd go out on the town and everybody would be crazy. And Saturday night games, I tell you what, I'd walk over next door to my parents' house and I'd have pregame with my dad, and he'd look at me and be like, you better put a show on tonight. You're playing the Blackhawks, it's Saturday night, you better put a show on. I'm like, you're damn right I will. And you go out there and try to fight John Scott. And, 17,000 people here at Scottrade, it was awesome. So,
great feeling, wasn't it?
Oh, God, euphoric, man. And then going out afterwards is always fun, too, in this city. So it was awesome.
Of course, the reason he wore 16 was because someone else wore 16 before number 16 wore 16. Did you get that one?
Yeah, kind of a riddle, but I kind of got it.
Brett, what is
someone wore 7 before 16, too.
7 after 16. 7 before 9. 9 and 7 make 16. It's all a number.
Why did all the great players wear number 9?
I do not know, because a lot of great players wore other numbers. Like, for instance,
maybe that's
16.
Why Wayne Gretzky's is twice as good as everyone, so he wore 2 9s.
No, I say... that he didn't know whether he was a Hull fan or a Howe fan, so he wore 99 to be yes.
Brett, you...
And the pocket, 16, yeah.
You can go on forever. All the greatest players wear 9.
You mentioned
16,
this,
I think.
You mentioned some of this in your Hall of Fame speech, Brett, but what did you learn from your dad about scoring goals?
I learned everything about scoring goals from my dad, but he didn't tell me it would have been nice to know from my first game. I could maybe have even more goals, but we were talking one day and he looks at me and it may have been at the University of Minnesota, and I was at Minnesota Duluth, and I hate the Gophers, so. And he was over in the bench, and I skated over, and he looks at me, and he goes, you know, son, the further you are from the play, the closer you are to it. There's got to be somewhere easier way to say something to me than that. I'm like, I don't know what you mean. And he goes, you'll figure it out. And so I played and I played and I played, and all of a sudden one day it just clicked in, and I said, the further I am away from the play, the closer I am to it. Get away from the play. Because, like, when Adam Oates or Peter Zezel comes out of that corner with the puck, if I'm in the corner, I'm not getting the puck. But if I'm over here wide open, I'm getting the puck. And those were the most genius words I've ever heard in my whole life.
He fails to tell you folks, too, that in Winnipeg, after every practice, we had a guy get in either corner with a pail of pucks. And it was throw the puck out to the guys standing in line to shoot, and it was get it and shoot it.
Get it and shoot it.
And Brett Hull used to stand there watching us. And finally I'd say, Brett, come on, get in here. And there were only maybe a couple of us on the Winnipeg team that could get the puck and get it away as quickly and as accurately as Brett Hull. And he was only 9 or 10 then. And I think maybe only Anders Hedberg and yours truly maybe could get the puck and shoot it any quicker or just the same quickness as what Brett could do. So I did teach him a little bit about it.
Just a little.
Bobby, I'm curious because on this topic, Vladimir Tarasenko said that he talked to you. What did you tell our star here in St. Louis, Vladdy?
I told him, if we had you in Chicago with the little bread man, we might have a team. And if you took the bread man to St. Louis, you guys might have a team. The little bread man, the little Russian, what's his name, Tony?
Panarin.
First of all, I'm gonna tell you what I told Vladdy, and that's the only thing that matters. Shoot and hit the net. Because if you shoot and hit the net, the goalies can't stop it because you shoot too good. Hit the net!
Tony and I are up there at just about every game at the United Center, and you people would be amazed if you were there how many shots hit the glass, hit the boards. And I holler out, 4x6. Don't you guys know that's the size of the net? Hit the GD net, and you might score some goals.
Tony, how many guys, when you were playing for the Blackhawks, and you only had five other teams, and you would play against them, how many guys per team did you even worry about them being a shooter?
Well, you know, the teams used to have three good lines. Because when you do the math and you got six teams, it makes sense you're going to have the best in the world. Now we have, you know, going to be 31 teams. So you can do the math there. So most teams now, if you got two good lines, you're a contender. In other words, two scoring lines. And that makes you a contender right there. But I would say in those days, we had more goal scoring in the late 60s and early 70s and Brett's day, because, you know, like guys used to get a lot of goals. Like 50 goals was pretty commonplace for the top scorers. Now if you get 50 goals, you get a new contract, that's for sure. But I'll give you an example. I don't know Bobby's stats, but my brother had 1 year in the early 70s, had 76 goals and 76 assists in 70
that's
games.
That's a lot of rebounds, Tony.
That's right. And I don't know what your stats are, but yours were high. Bobby's were high.
Bobby, I got a question for you. I saw that you used to come out on the ice and you used to mess with the goalies pretty good. You would take a slap shot just inside the blue line and whiz it right by their head just to get them thinking, and the puck would go ding, 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 all the way back around the ice, and you'd skate off like, yeah, yeah, I'll be back. And that one's going top shelf next time. That's a brain. You're getting in their heads right off the bat there. That would have screwed me up for sure.
I used to use a little intimidation, but I wasn't shooting at their head. My greatest intimidation was if I started the game, I wanted to score on that first shift.
He used to wink at their wives in the stands.
No, I was just saying hello to the families. But I did, if the shift, at the end of the shift, the 2 or 3 minutes that I'd be out there, and if I was at a bad angle, I would drill it up kind of high, and I would go by the goaltender's ears and hit the glass and go all the way down the other end of the ice, and then I'd skate as closely as I could in front of the goaltender and just kind of peer at him a little bit. And I just made him think, what the hell is he going to shoot at me next? I wanted to use intimidation. And let me say why I have the mic. I'm sorry. I'm watching the game from the box with Brett's family. And Wayne Gretzky's family. And a shot came on from the one end where the guitar is, and it went all the way out to the arch. And what a beautiful, beautiful shot that was. And I was so proud to be at the game, and I was hoping that St. Louis, everyone would see it in St. Louis and be as proud as I was at that beautiful shot.
Tony, I was curious, since Bobby brought up what he was doing just before games to try and get into goaltenders' heads, what was it like having to practice against this guy for so many years?
Well, we had an agreement, and he never slapped the puck at me. He wrist shots only. And he kept it down by my waist or lower. So the other goalie took a beating. The backup goalie.
Dennis DeGiordi.
And then we had Mike Weiser. I don't know who else, Bobby. But I'll tell you, I remember Jerry Desjardins, the one game of practice. He got hit 3 times in the face mask. When he came in the locker room, it was like he was in a major fist fight. And I looked at myself, thank God it's him and not me.
It made you want to be better, didn't it? So you didn't have to do that? Because Curtis Joseph and I had the same agreement. I always told Cujo, he goes like, how do you score? And I go, you know, Cujo, I shoot in practice like it's a game. And no matter where you stand in the net, I'm going to shoot where I'm going to shoot in a game. And he goes, well, where is that? And so we went out for a couple of cold ones, and I told him where all those spots were. And so depending on where I was in practice, he would just kind of saddle up against the one post, and I'd shoot it over there. And then he'd move over here, and then I'd shoot over here. And so that's the way it was. And it was like, and that's, well, I've tried to tell every goal scorer, including Vadi Tarasenko, I go, Vladdy, don't shoot to score in practice. Shoot to score like you're in a game, because goalies cheat.
Especially in practice.
Because it's survival. Do you want 20 guys shooting pucks at you all day? I don't blame them. But they cheat. So if you go down and shoot to try and score on Tony Esposito in practice, well, you're not going to score there in a game.
We had another Hull that played in Chicago with me. His name was Dennis. You folks remember Dennis? They tried to compare our shots. They said likely I could shoot the puck through a car wash without the puck getting wet. They said Dennis could shoot the puck every bit as hard or maybe harder, but he just couldn't hit the car wash. That's...
Number 10.
Yes? Ward number 10 before Reggie Kerr, I think. Right, Tony?
And after?
And after Del Monte. Del Monte, what's his name?
Oh, and he had a good career in fruit.
Oh, yes, he did.
Yeah, Del Monte.
Tony Amonte, we're just kidding. Kidding. Oh.
Tony was with me.
Ding dong.
Oh, I see.
Before Dennis, who wore number 10?
I sometimes forget, Brad.
Tony, who was number 10 on the Blackhawks before Dennis?
I'm sorry, but I'm not that old.
Good answer, Tony. But folks, I don't know whether you know it or not.
Was it Doug Moens?
No, he was 11. I don't know whether you folks know it or not, but one of these guys up here on the stage is going to be a year older in a couple of days, and he will accept cards and letters and money and whatever. January 3rd.
Don't worry, I got it covered.
Any other Capricorns out there? Yeah, yeah.
I'll pay good money for anyone to come and help them up the stairs at my house.
Hey, Brett. You bringing up Cujo, Brett, reminds me of 1993, the sweep of the Blackhawks in the series. It was an unbelievable hockey team and an incredible performance by Cujo, 63 saves in one game. But what a scene that was in Game 4 and really just that entire season.
Well, that's where you fall in love with a goalie. You know, that's when you fall in love with Tony Esposito and you go, he's the greatest player on the planet. And that series, Cujo was the greatest player on the planet. We had no business winning. We had no business being in any game. And we won every game either 1-0 or 2-1. And like you said, he had 60-some saves in a 1-0 win in Chicago Stadium. And it was just like, this is incredible. Incredible. We had no business because the Chicago Blackhawks, and this goes to show you how hard it is to win a Stanley Cup. You can be a great team and a goalie can just snuff your season out like Cujo did to the Blackhawks. And then we go and play another team and they just outscore us because we couldn't score. So it is... You know, you just stick by these Blues. They're going to be just fine. And I'm going to tell you another thing right now. Tomorrow is going to be the greatest game you've ever seen in your life. You're going to have two iconic franchises, the Chicago Blackhawks with the history that they have done, the St. Louis Blues, who, you know, we kind of roll under the radar. 1967. How many franchises have folded? And how many franchises have moved? Not us. We've been here from 67. And it's because of you. You fans have driven us. And it'll always be a Cardinal Nation, but our hockey core is as true as anything in this world. And you go out and you support that game because it is going to be epic. Because I just played in a game yesterday, and it was just for fun, and it was epic.
And the ice looked good too, eh, Owen?
Ice was great. Ice was great. Yeah. Ice was great. Yeah. So neat.
I actually got to tell a quick little story about you, Holly. I was 6 years old, and we have a place at the Lake of the Ozarks. No. Yeah, 6 years old. He still had the mole at the time. And my mom and dad were like, we got a surprise for you at the Lake of the Ozarks. We had a place down there. And I'm like, oh, cool, what is it? A new go-kart? Oh, cool. Me and my cousin's like, oh, what is it? What is it? What is it? They're like, don't worry. Come down the lake. You'll see. I'm like, okay. We get down the Lake of the Ozarks. We have a cool a boat. We cruising around. And me and my cousin are like, what the hell, Dad? Like, what's going on here? What is it? What is it? Where's the go-kart? Where's whatever? They're like, just relax, Cam. We're going to it right now. We're meeting somebody in a cove. I'm like, okay. We pull up to this big boat, George Hansford. Georgie Hansford used to hang, yeah, my mom, the Train Wreck Saloon, Holly's little spot there, and my dad and my uncle used to go there all the time. So we pull up into this cove, and again, this is when he was gigantic. This is when I used to go in McDonald's and cruise twice, have make my mom and dad go twice around the McDonald's just to get the cup and the action figure from him and just keep it and hand it to my buddies and keep the other ones. So we pull up to this cove, and we look, and my dad pulls up next to this boat, and he goes, I go, Dad, and me and the cousins, like, what's going on? Obviously, there's no go-kart. Obviously, there's no whatever. He goes, Cam, look over there. And I look, and Fred Hall just walks up out of this bow in this big-ass boat that he was in. And I'm like, oh, my God. And you were doing a commercial at the time with Ted on the ice for Boatman's Bank. Oh, you know the hell I'm talking. Remember Ted? So I drew you a picture of you and Ted on this boat, and you took it. You're like, oh, gee, thanks, kid. And you threw it on like this. I'm like, damn it. The coolest thing.
I knew by your printing you were going to be defensive.
Damn you, man. So anyway, I got to chill with him in a cove at the Lake of the Ozarks when I'm 6 years old.
14-mile cove?
What was that? You're asking me?
I've only been there a couple of times.
Oh, I go back there, though. Yeah. So that's when I first met him, by the way, and now I'm sitting up here shooting the shit with him. Pretty cool stuff. Hell yeah.
Hopefully everything goes away on time tomorrow and the weather cooperates. But
what's the forecast? Come on. Hold on.
Fire it up.
What do you got?
Hold on. To what you got.
Just ask WGN. They'll tell you.
Yeah.
If for some reason the there game is delayed, I'm just curious, what would all you guys be doing during the delay for the puck drop?
Hold on. Here it is. 50 and kind of something.
75 and something.
Hold on. What time's the game? Noon?
Noon.
Yes.
Oh, it's not that big a deal. It's only 80% chance of rain. What?
I knew we'd be fine. We're going to be just
but
fine.
What does that mean in St. Louis, 80? Like 10?
It changes by the hour here. I mean, we don't know what it's going to be. Until.
It's going to be 50.
Who cares? It'll be exciting one way or the other. If it's a downpour, it'll be a disaster and exciting.
Just think we can get the game in by Wednesday.
Oh.
Hey, Bobby.
Wait, actually. Oh, my God.
Bobby,
God,
let me
dude.
Ask you, because Tony was really intense on game days, what would it be like for him if all of a sudden his routine was slightly thrown off?
Superstitious, I read.
We were always very kind to our goaltenders. Tony,
goaltender.
Tony didn't want to be bothered on the day of a game, so we didn't bother him. There was a guy that played before him by the name of Glenn Hall. There was a little different story. Glenn Hall used to get the adrenaline flowing in the pit of his stomach so severe that it would make him nauseous. You wouldn't understand. Have you ever got the adrenaline flowing and got sick to your stomach? Well, that's what happened to Glenn Hall. And before you can be as strong as you possibly can be, you have to get the adrenaline flowing in the pit of your guts. And Glenn Hall used to get them flowing even a little too much, and then he'd start to get sick, and it was and he wouldn't sit over by the washroom. He had to sit all the way across the dressing room. That's where he sat always, and clump, 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 he'd get up, and you'd hear it, and Makita would say, attaboy, Gooley, get good and sick. Because the sicker you get, the better you play.
I don't do you know the creamer, like it's hot stuff you rub on yourself and it's like hot?
Icy hot, icy hot.
They owe Tony Esposito a big debt of gratitude because he would rub it all over himself before every game.
Well, I mean, I didn't put it all over. I mean, I put it, you know, on the areas where you're not going to be, you're not going to get pain, you know, and pain and suffering. I've seen guys get that stuff there. They put it up high a little bit, and it's when it warms up.
Oh God!
It really burns. I've seen guys in warm-ups skate around and. We used to initiate rookies like that. Put it in their inner jock.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And then when it would heat up, they'd be skating around, and you look at them and you're laughing because they're going around and it's getting warmer. And then they get to the point where they gotta get off the ice. Yeah.
And the more you sweat, the worse it is.
Guys, they'd have to get off and jump in the shower.
And that doesn't
help. That was the initiation.
That made it worse. That made it worse. Oh, my God.
That was initiation. That was good.
Oh, God.
Lots of fun.
Tony Esposito was like a genius, right, late in his career in Chicago. He put webbing, like the net, in between his legs. And it's like, well, that's not right, right? And now it's like, oh, I would rather have them webbing between their legs than the pads they wear today.
The reason I put webbing in there, what I did was I got some elastic, heavy elastic, and I sewed it in. So when I went down on my knees, the puck didn't get through. Stretched out very nice. And then they decided to make a rule against me, and then I had to... And then the other thing I did was I started the wide catching glove on the side. And I had it, and they tried to get me to cut it off one time. But I said in the rule book, your gloves can be 8 inches wide. It doesn't say your catching glove can't be that wide. So I built it up, and they couldn't take that away. But I tried every little gimmick I could. Stuff the pads, make them wider, everything.
Hey, Tony, what's the worst injury you've ever had?
I really haven't had any injuries. I never missed game. I've had little ones, like cracked ribs.
That would have been a better one to ask my dad.
Well, I had cracked ribs. I played with them. I had a separated shoulder. I played with it. And just like broken toes and stuff. But nothing real serious. Major. Not like broken legs.
What about you, Bobby?
I was very fortunate during my career. I played 23 years professionally, and one bad year I had, and it was in the WHA. I dislocated my wrist and couldn't shoot the puck, and I was just coming back, being able to shoot the puck in the first game, I think, and my centerman, Alfie Nelson, was high load right in front of me. Both defensemen got him, and they spun him around, and his skate severed the tendon in my ankle just above my skate. Right. Went into a space likely the width of a blade, and it just severed the tendon in my ankle. So I didn't play the first half because of the wrist, and then I didn't play the second half because of the tendon. But then when we hit the playoffs, I think I led the team in scoring in the playoff because I was rested. Deal. I did have a broken jaw in the NHL with Chicago, but I didn't miss any games. I think I missed one game. That's all that.
You gotta think.
He had the worst breath in a locker room. I used to give him Listerine. I say, gargle this, Bobby.
In the game,
I didn't know we got that close, Tony.
In the game we're going to see tomorrow, it's Joel Quenneville against Ken Hitchcock. Brett, you had a chance to play for both of those guys. What were they like?
Hitch first. Then Keenan.
Well, they're obviously great coaches. And Coach Q has won 3 Stanley Cups with the Chicago Blackhawks. And Coach Hitchcock won a Stanley Cup with myself in Dallas in 99. They're highly intelligent. And I think the thing that really sets them apart from other coaches is they understand more than X's and O's, because the game is pretty simple. Cam, Tony, and my dad and I could go behind the bench.
It wasn't simple for me, Brett. It wasn't simple for me.
We could go behind the bench and coach a team, because it's, X's and O's. This is how you do it. But it's how you deal with the players. And they've obviously done a great job with dealing with the personalities. Because let me tell you, you can sit here and watch Tony. Tony's got a different personality than me. And he's a goalie, right? So you let him Tony be Tony. You got my dad, just let him be him. Like, as long as he shows up for the meeting, you're going to be all right. And as long as he shows up for the bus, it'll be all right. I just want to play forever. I'm not sitting on the bench. I want to go out. I want to play. And that's what Adam Oates said to me yesterday. He goes, we may be older. We may be a little this or that. And he goes, I still hate sitting on the bench. And you got Cam. And Cam understands what it means to be a guy that sticks up for his teammates, that does things for his team that maybe nobody notices. They do now, but they may have not have noticed in the past. So we could coach a team, but if your team stinks, your team stinks. That's all there is to it.
Hey, Bobby.
You either have good players or you don't have good players. And the Blues and the Blackhawks have good players.
Damn good players. Hey, Bobby, you had you showed up late one time for a bus. And remember, some of the guys in the back said something. Hey, are we leaving without Bobby? And somebody stood up and said something. You know what I'm talking about.
Just precursor that by you were single at the time.
I suppose I kept the bus the odd time, but anytime the players ever needed anything, they'd always come to me. Bobby, do you know where I could get a deal on a fur coat for my wife? Bobby, do you know where I could get a new bed for? And I said, yeah, guys, I know all those people. They were the ones that I kept the bus. I kept the bus waiting for.
Your wife knew them.
So, make a statement that Brett was talking about, all great players like to play. They like to play every second shift. And if you're coaching a team, it would be very easy. I'd put my best players out there to start the game, to start the period, to kill penalties, on the power play, to get them out there as often as I can, because they want to play.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
We can hear you.
Anyway, when Bobby was delaying the bus because he was signing autographs and that, I told one of the guys who was bitching and moaning that Bobby's now is delaying the bus. I said, when you score 50 goals, we'll hold the bus for you.
Ladies and gentlemen, the NHL has announced that at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning, they will announce the start time for the Winter Classic. So there will be an announcement tomorrow at 7 a.m. where they will determine the start time for tomorrow. Just getting that information in.
We are live on WGN in Chicago. KMOX, a big part of tonight, and we thank our KMOX staff. How about a round of applause for KMOX Radio? And to Bud Light, how about a big round of applause for Bud Light? This rivalry rally is not possible without them. The Blues and the Blackhawks in the Winter Classic tomorrow. It's going to be amazing. Let's thank our friends from Chicago. Please say thank you, Judd Surratt, Tony Esposito, Bobby Hull. From the St. Louis Blues, Cam Jansen. And Brett Hull.
We had a great time. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks so much. I'm Tom Ackerman. Thanks again for being with us. Coming up next, the Thomas Nicholas Band will be here for a performance. Thanks again for joining us here at Ballpark Village at the Bud Light Rivalry Rally.